Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Kavit Afwai. President Obama's speech on counterterrorism, his first major speech during his second term, in which for the first time he went into details and defended the drone assassination program. But for these strikes to be legal under international law and to have saved lives, as he said in his speech? Well, in this debate, we'll be discussing the facts behind the assassination drone strikes, why Obama has decided to limit the number of these strikes, and more importantly, why he has come out at this point in time and said that perpetual war will prove self-defeating.
On 9/11.
In a pivotal speech at National Defense University in Washington, U.S. President Barack Obama defended assassination drone strikes targeting suspected militants in Muslim countries as a just war. He outlined a newer standard of deadly drone strikes being carried out in several Muslim countries, including Yemen and Pakistan. Mr. Obama stayed persistent on a commitment to the so-called war on terror that began under former President George W. Bush. He vowed that there would be more accuracy of drone strikes designed to decrease civilian casualties. Washington claims the drone strikes target militants, but facts on the ground show a large number of civilians have also lost their lives in the air raids.
America's at a crossroads. We must define the nature and scope of this struggle, or else it will define us.
The speech comes a day after the Obama administration defended the killing of four Americans, including American-born Anwar al-Awlaki.
And at least 30
activists who stood outside of the venue where the U.S. president spoke condemned Obama administration policy over drone strikes.
This is warfare in absentia. The military won't even take responsibility for its own actions.
Protesters say hundreds of innocent people have been killed in drone strikes, but it's difficult to know the exact figures. As U.S. President Barack Obama speaks inside at National Defense University, protesters are out here bringing attention to Guantanamo Bay Prison and U.S.-led drone strikes. As you can hear behind me, they're reading the names of those killed in those U.S.-led drone assassinations. The U.S. president also discussed his desire to close down Guantanamo Bay Prison, an act he failed to do so when he encountered Republican opposition in Congress. He admitted that the jail has become a symbol of U.S. violations of international law in his speech. The president called on Congress to remove some of the restrictions and establish a new facility in the United States to hold trials for some suspects. But he announced that only after Medea Benjamin, a well-known D.C. activist, interrupted the president and urged him to shut the prison down.
So today, once again, today, I'm about to address it, ma'am, but you got to let me speak.
Most of the detainees at the prison, meanwhile, are in the midst of a hunger strike protesting their conditions. At least 30 are being force-fed, according to U.S. military reports, and some protesters in D.C. have joined in their fast. Some protesters, like Diane Wilson, who is in her 24th day of a hunger strike, says her experience pales in comparison to the prisoners, some of whom have been on a hunger strike for more than 100 days and are clinging to life.
You definitely have confusion. You start getting stomach aches. I get stomach aches, but I'm still a lot stronger than the guys in Guantanamo.
John Pope traveled from Florida to protest Gitmo's continuation and is on the 10th day of a hunger strike.
Not every single American is a fascist pig, and that some of us really, really care about justice.
Mr. Obama said that members of Congress have been informed of all U.S. drone strikes. He said he's open to the possibility of an independent oversight panel or special court. This week, the Pentagon asked Congress for more than $450 million for maintaining and upgrading the notorious Guantanamo Bay prison, despite growing calls demanding its closure. Colin Campbell, Press TV, Washington.
Let me introduce our guests to see if they can distinguish between fact from fiction, depending on how you look at the facts, as for U.S. President Barack Obama outlined in a speech. We have former intelligence linguist Scott Rickert joining us from Florida, and we have a Labor MEP, Robert Evans, joining us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Scott Rickert, let me start out with you. We're going to go through some of the statements Obama made. One of America's actions are legal. They are under domestic and international laws. Do you agree with what Obama said there?
No, not at all. Obama is, once again proven to speak through the sides of his mouth. He has obviously committed war crimes as the President of the United States throughout the Middle East and across Africa. This rhetoric is typical from the American administrations, regardless of what party is in power. And it's really driven by the military industrial complex and the financial communities that are you know, lobbying and driving the congressional and the Capitol Hill crews that they own. Now, for Obama to say that this is illegal, you know, obviously, you know, attacking other countries, and it's not just Yemen, and it's not just Pakistan. You know, there's a lot of activity right now in Libya. There's a lot of activity right now, even in Somalia. So there, you know, but there's nobody there to report it. These countries are, you know, far too volatile, and there's nobody on the ground. If you've noticed, there's been very little information coming out of those regions. So no, it is an international war crime. And as I said before in several interviews, unfortunately, because between France, the UK, and the US basically dominating the world finances over the last 200 years, they've never been held accountable for their war crimes.
Again, we're breaking down the statements made there by U.S. President Barack Obama. Robert Evans, he said that this saves lives, these strikes, and when any strike is taken, there must be with certainty that the strikes don't kill any civilians. On the other hand, you have what's called signature strikes. This is when the strikes fire on people whose identities they don't know, but only based on circumstantial evidence. It seems like the facts, as Obama is stating, goes against the realities and the details behind these drone strikes. I mean, why is it that Obama is not mentioning some of these additional details, such as signature strikes?
Well, I think we need to know a lot more. I don't think we will, but I think we should like to hear a lot more. This is all based, or these drone attacks are all based on so-called intelligence and information they've received around the world. And by its very nature, it's second or third hand, and we know that its reliability sometimes comes into question. Having said that, from all the evidence, it's remarkably efficient. But if you were one of four people or 10 people or even one person who had somebody in your family killed who has absolutely nothing to do with it, you would be very disturbed about it. But I will say the United States and President Obama has, and I'm not defending their policy, but it's come a long way. I was in Pakistan, I think it was about 5 years ago, and I asked the American ambassador there if she was told in advance of drone attacks or whether the Pakistan government knew anything about it. And her response was, "What drone attacks?" So we've moved on in a few years from absolute denial that they were taking place to President Obama making a speech, albeit one that perhaps poses as many questions as it presents answers.
And based on that, before we go into actually an account by one of these drone operators, you talk about making strides there. I'm looking at, on paper, 355 attacks resulting in the deaths of 3,336 people. There's got to be some kind of explanation to those families, not to mention that that number could be a lot more. But before we get into that, let's listen to a drone operator and what his experience has dictated.
We fired the missile, and 1.2 seconds after the missile fires, it sonic booms. And the guy in the rear hears this, and he runs forward to the two guys in front, and then the missile hits. The blood rapidly cooled to become the same color as the ground, because we're watching this in infrared. And then I eventually watched the guy become the same color as the ground that he died on. In my own mind, I thought these guys could have been local people that had to protect themselves, and I think we jumped the gun. We just aim at the corner of the building. We're going to fire. And we do. And there's about 6 seconds left before the missile impacts. And something runs around the corner of the building. And it looked like a small person. There's no other way for me to describe it. It was a small, two-legged person. And missile hits. There's no sign of this person. The large portion of the building's collapsed.
There you have an account of a drone operator. Scott Rickard, what's alarming about that is that there have been these casualties, obviously civilians, and the last one there, I believe, was obviously it indicated it might have been a child there. But we don't have the U.S. come out and make any motions towards, except Obama did make some admittance for U.S. nationals to have been killed, and there are civilians that are being killed, but not enough. Why did he choose this moment in time to come out in this venue and pretty much get into what's been deemed as classified, not anymore, of these drone strike operations?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with activities like activists like myself and all of the independent reporters around the world. You know, you have folks that are starting to sort of break the glass ceiling of the media control that's the government's been so basically taking advantage of for you know several decades. And you have you know, a lot of folks that, just as your previous, the other speaker had said, there's the policy is not really changing. It's just that it is more difficult for governments to be as subversive and as clandestine. You know, everybody's walking around with recording devices. Everybody's communicating on a very regular basis now. You have excellent programs like RT and Press TV that are, you know, basically cutting through the rhetoric and speaking a lot of very controversial truth about these issues. And now, you know, they have to come clean. So I don't think it's a policy change. I think it's just that, you know, you get caught red-handed and you have to come up with explanations. And, you know, as well as I do, the censorship on Press TV and the censorship, you know, and any kind of syndication across Western media, they're trying to quell this type of communication because they realize that they aren't being held accountable for what is clearly international crimes that, you know, eventually, hopefully somebody is going to be held accountable for it.
This idea of accountability is what I'd like to discuss with you, Robert Evans, before that statements by the drone operator. I mentioned 355 such attacks since 2004, 3,336 to have been killed. We had, during a speech, it was noted Senator Lindsey Graham, the U.S. Senator, who divulged secret drone casualty estimates. He said 4,700 killed. There's got to be accountability somewhere there, don't you think, by the U.S. government? And, of course, with the cooperation of the Pakistani government for these innocent people who have been killed.
I think it's quite dreadful, the number of innocent people who've been killed, and I don't think you can possibly defend it. And it's no wonder that the Pakistan government and indeed the people of Pakistan are very disturbed and distressed about this. And, you know, I think you have to question the whole ethos behind this policy. If President Obama and other presidents before him, and indeed the CIA, their rationale is that they are eliminating, killing terrorists who are a threat to the United States. My view, and it's one I think shared by many people, that it's a never-ending task. You know, for every terrorist that you kill or eliminate in Pakistan, the mere nature of that policy, that action, will stimulate someone else to take his or her place. And if you kill innocent people and children, you're going to find that you enlist members of that family, people who seek revenge against the United States or whoever they see as the perpetrators of the crime. I just think it's such a policy, such a flawed policy. And however difficult and however futile it may seem, I would much rather the United States and the international community looked at dialogue as a way to trying to resolve this terrible situation of international terrorism.
And the idea of this international terrorism to stop them, and especially the ones who, I guess, are jeopardizing or would threaten the U.S.'s national security, Robert Evans, he says we need to stop them first. Now, this goes against some of the other statements that he made. I'm going to break that down with Scott Rickard later. But what was interesting is that he said that perpetual war will prove self-defeating. We have now been at war for well over a decade, but this war, like all wars, must end. Is that just for domestic consumption, or is there any truth behind that statement by President Barack Obama?
Well, I think everybody wants this war, this dreadful situation to end. I don't. Obama is not alone in that. And when he says we must end it, well, of course we must. We must do everything within our powers. The international community must act together. But I just can't see, and I think an awful lot of rational people in the United States and elsewhere will question whether drone attacks, whether it kills terrorists or not, whether it, and certainly if it kills innocent people, whether this is actually a solution, whether you are eliminating a few people and then there are more people to take their place. I don't see, and I don't think the international community has got the evidence yet of the success of this policy.
Scott Ricker, two statements that he said I'm going to put together in order to get some explanation from you. The U.S. is at war with al-Qaeda, Taliban, and their associated forces. And then he talks about how, well, these are the same forces that we need to stop because the governments of no other country can stop terrorists. How do you put these two together in terms of what he's trying to say?
Well, Obama might, like most administrations that have been ruling the ruling classes of the NATO alliance and the Americans, for nearly 100 years, they are consistently, speaking out of both sides of their mouths. At one point, they're recruiting mercenaries to attack Libya and Syria, and on the other point, they're saying they're fighting mercenaries because those countries can't control it. Well, there is a lot of illegal activity in, say, Afghanistan in the heroin trade that's coming out of Afghanistan. That's easily a $500 to $600 billion annual business. So, and that's a business, a size of a briefcase. You can hold well over $1.5 million street value of a product, as opposed to a barrel of oil being only $100. So that business is a well-known, century-old business. The UK had at one point was shipping 70,000 tons of opium to China during the Chinese Opium Wars, and today the production around the world is only around 35,000-40,000 tons. So this is a part of the business that's involved with the military-industrial complex and the drug the drug industry, and that drug industry and military-industrial complex is tied back into the financial industry. That this is not going to change. There is a lot of money being made every time a drone flies and every time a drone drops. There's a lot of money being made every time somebody shoots the cruise missile. And those things, they want to make more. And Boeing is a very profitable company in the United States. And they have hundreds and hundreds of lobbyists just roaming the halls of Congress and roaming the halls of the Senate. So until you kill the root of the problem, this is really just speaking out of both sides of your mouth and not telling the truth. And there will be perpetual war. This is not going to stop, and they're going to continue. I would say it's just a high value a business for a lot of businesses that should be held accountable for their criminal activity.
Well, let's look at some of the consequences here, Robert Evans, especially Pakistan being the focus here, but also other countries that drone operations have been exercised in, these assassination drone strikes, like in Afghanistan, like in Iraq, like in Yemen. Robert Evans in London, you know what happened with this butchering, which is a deplorable act that was occurred by this man criticizing foreign policy that Britain has exercised. We can mention, of course, the war in Iraq. But of course, the United States and what it has done, they were a victim, the Boston bombings being the most recent episode that occurred there. So we can see that this foreign policy, which is aimed, and it seems Muslim countries, Islamic countries targeting Muslims, is what these two instances of hopefully not many more to come is justifiable for the people who have been involved in the attacks. So can't this ring alarm bells there in Washington at the White House?
Well, I do think we need to get these things into perspective. the tragic, dreadful incident in southeast London yesterday when the soldier was killed in the street is thankfully so unusual, so rare, that we have to be careful not to overreact. And similar incidences around the world. What we do need to recall, though, is that these are very isolated occurrences and they're perpetrated by very, very few people. I know literally, personally, hundreds, thousands of Muslims in London, and they are each, every one, they find these things abhorrent. They are appalled by the attacks. And we should not forget that Islam is a religion of peace. It's a peaceful religion based on perfectly reasonable practices. These attacks, things done in the name of Islam, are completely wrong, completely misguided. The danger is that it turns ordinary people or people who are looking for an excuse into opponents of Islam on anybody who's a Muslim. And that is very, very dangerous. And likewise, where the United States and other countries are seen to be waging a war on Islamic countries, it's very, very dangerous because I've been to Pakistan, Afghanistan, many Muslim Islamic countries, and they're wonderful places and a lot of lovely people there. But we have to be careful not to be increasingly alienating them and making them feel that this is a war against Islam.
We're going to talk about Afghanistan in a second based on what Obama said. Scott Rickert, I want to ask you that question. But first, let's take a look at viewer comments as sent on our Facebook page.
The U.S. drone strikes in Islamic countries is unjustifiable. It should rather initiate means of improving its internal security and fortifying all its borders than resorting to attacking and killing innocent people in the so-called war against terror in countries which do not have common border.
Viewer comment there as posted on our Facebook page. Scott Rickert, I'm trying to squeeze out some hope from what President Barack Obama has said when he talked about how, this perpetual war will prove self-defeating, or when he says, beyond Afghanistan, we must define our effort not as a boundless global war on terror. For the past 10 or 11 years, the image of the United States has been chipped away by each death that occurs, especially on these drone strikes, with, countries that the U.S. has been involved in wars. Do you think there's a shift away from this perpetual state of war that the U.S. is involved in?
I certainly don't see an end to it until the people actually will be the only thing that can change it. The government has absolutely no intention of cutting their industries across the states, and the military-industrial complex has been absolutely strategic at placing businesses across different districts and congressional districts, so that if you attack any kind of military programs, basically you're taking jobs away from the people that work in your districts. So it's a business, and it's a horrific business. It's because it's a killing machine business, and it's highly imperialist. There is no end to it that I can see until we have a larger amount of people. But I respect the other speaker's opinion, and calling the murders of these horrific events in the Boston bombing and in London with the murder of the soldier. Unfortunately, I wouldn't consider those people ordinary. There are a lot of people who have really been trained to think very negatively about Muslims in the United States. Obviously there are very moderate individuals as well, but there are, in a country of 300 million people, I would say easily 20% of them are highly anti-Muslim. I live in a state that is it's fearful for me to see how what kind of prejudice that these individuals have and how little knowledge they have, but they're basically just parakeets for a lot of the media that comes out. So at the end of the day, Yeah, you're not going to have a lot of
people. I got
to
jump in. I apologize, Scott Rickard. We're just fresh out of time. Former intelligence linguist Scott Rickard there. And thank you, Robert Evans. He spoke to us. He's a Labour MEP from
London.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for watching another edition of The Debate from Mikhail Vatakwa and the entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.